the Specials Podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Welcome along to a special Specials Podcast from William Hill. Today we're talking to the very first winner of the X Factor. Steve Brookstein's had a tumultuous decade, to say the least, and we've got him online, I'm delighted to say, to tell us about that X Factor win and to talk through some of the things that have happened to him since then. Steve, brilliant read. Welcome along, first of all. Must have been some process writing the book.
Oh, well, hi, thanks. It was a tough few months. We kind of got going on it. I worked with a guy called Tony Horn, who's a broadcaster, and we got together through a mutual friend on Facebook. And it's a book that I've been meaning to write for years, but when Max Clifford went down earlier this year, it kind of made sense. And it just so happened that it was also 10 years since I won the X Factor. So I kind of thought, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. And he kind of helped me get it done. And all these thoughts that I've been just keeping up over the years, it's been a relief to kind of just get it all down on paper and let people know exactly kind of what happened and all the things and the pitfalls surrounding X Factor and why it went wrong for me.
Yeah, it's kind of done in diary form, isn't it? And obviously the start of the book it pretty much starts when you first get that envelope, you know, when you're a successful gigging musician, you know, you're just about to support Lionel Richie, for goodness sake, and you know, you have to drop these kind of gigs to get onto the X Factor. Let's just start with the X Factor first of all, because what we do here is we obviously focus on the betting side and other talent TV shows and things like I'm a Celebrity that's on now. So we take a really keen interest on the conspiracy side of it, and you know, which is something that reading that first chunk of the book, when it's, you know, your journey through, excuse the word, through the X Factor, it's just fascinating. At that early stage, the very first one, of course, and we don't know anything about these conspiracy theories at the time, and you're almost experiencing it as a viewer and a contestant at the time, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, funny enough, I've got a friend of mine, I said to him, have a bet, and I was at 16-1, and there's only 9 contestants in the final then. He made some money on it, but I suppose I should take some bets, because I've kind of been right on pretty much all of them. I kind of know now all the things that are going on behind the scenes and how they're portraying certain people as winners and losers. Mm. You know, so if you really want to know who's going to win, you kind of got to look at the newspapers. That's what I do, and I see who they're vilifying, and then you think, right, you can start forget about him. He's going to go. And the last couple of weeks I've been bang on, but It's a funny old game. I mean, I hate to say use a football thing, but it is. X Factor is crazy, and I don't know. I'm glad that I'm at that point now where it's not. But I mean, obviously, I still tweet about it, and I have all that sort of input on it. But it's purely for selfish reasons, you know.
That's fair enough. Before we get onto the rest of the book, just again back to that period of when you were on X Factor. What's brilliant about it, Stephen, maybe other people will do this, and I don't know if you would like people to do this or not, but I read a bit, and then I went and looked on YouTube to see if I could find a clip about that bit, and I couldn't believe how vitriolic, particularly Sharon Osbourne. I'm reading the stuff I watched, you know, when you were on X Factor. It's obviously a long time ago, but I don't remember it being like that, and I'm reading the thing, I'm thinking, was she that bad? I mean, they're not like that now. They're in the final, for instance, everyone's nice to everyone. And so I'm going to have a look at this. And there's a clip in particular, which I think is called Steve Brookstein, Sharon Osbourne, final or something. And the venom. I mean, it's a personal attack. What was it like going through that process towards the end? Because you kind of had it in three chunks, from what I can see. The first bit was you were all over the place. Then you seemed to warm into the competition. Then as it got close to the semi-final and final, you started to kind of really almost panic again. That's how it comes across.
I think you kind of realise that it's, you know, I went with the flow to begin with because it was a bit of fun. But then it gets all stuck. I kept on saying to my girlfriend, who's now my wife at the time, I said, that as long as I come out of this irony, I said, as long as I don't come out of this looking like an idiot. And up until during the show, it kind of was all right. And I only looked like an idiot after the show, which I guess in my wishes to God, that wasn't really what I included. So I just noticed just how things were changing, and when it becomes serious, when it all becomes about the money and egos, and Sharon, Simon and Louis, they've all got massive egos, and they all wanted to win, but it's always going to be Simon winning the first series. I mean, that's why if you're talking about it for your listeners, but you know, Ben and Fleur, they must be the two favourites now, aren't they?
No, Andrea's still the favourite because I think he was...
Really? He is great, but outside bet on Ben and Fleur is really worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ben probably. But anyway, it kind of made me just think that...
It feels like you didn't quite know what to expect. Like you almost like you suddenly realised when it came to the final, like you've played with fire and you may well get burnt here. That's kind of what I got out of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially, you know, because the thing is, you know, as you see, I wasn't really aware of the things that the press and the games that people play. I thought it was just, you know, stupidly. You think it's mainly about your singing, and you know if they happen to like you as a person.
There were some funny bits in the bit during X Factor. I mean, I won't say any more than the Jackie Sinclair Sunita bit was standout. There's a great quote as well right near the end, without wanting to kind of ruin too much of it. There's a great quote that you say that the quote is, "I'm 35, sitting in a mansion trying to impress a guy who turned up late to his own microwave dinner party." I mean, it kind of encapsulates the idiocy of it all, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, that was a real nightmare. That was how it became. By then the wheels were, you know, you're going down this hill at 100 miles an hour. There was no stopping it. You can't suddenly get off, and you do have these breaking, and again that's on YouTube, and you have these moments where you break down and people think, oh look, he's so emotional because of he wants the success or he wants the fame or he's so close to getting his dream. I mean, if only you knew the half of it. If you only knew the things that are really stressing me out, and sometimes it can be you know in that situation it was a case of being absolutely starving and having to go over the same old nonsense again, and being in a guy's mansion where you're having a dinner party and it's obviously microwaved Marks and Spencers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, we would never... You would, that bit...
And you weren't allowed to eat it anyway.
I was starving. But then you're sitting there with this glass of wine, and these people, and you're at this fake dinner party, and it's like, you don't get that invite. Well, bring your missus along, you know?
Yeah.
Come on, I'm getting to know you, Steve. Come on, bring your missus. We'll all sit together and have a chat. But you walk in, the cameras start rolling, and, you know, it turns up, does a little scene, and then leaves the table. Did we have coffee? Did we have starter? Did we have, you know? But on the film, it looks, oh wow, he's gone around his house and they've had dinner.
Yeah.
You know, and you assume that I had a starter, you assume that I had the main course, and you assume that I had the dessert, and none of it happened.
Yeah.
You know, and it's thanks, right, cut. Bye, everyone. Nice knowing you. And he walks out of the room. It's that kind of attitude, you know. It's, but you know, there should be a reality show on reality shows.
Wow, yeah, that's you know? That's where it'll move to, won't it? I've seen other interviews with you on YouTube, and you know, a couple of years ago, where you said you didn't necessarily regret. You if you had your time again, you'd do it again. Would you, if you had your time again, Stephen? You could pick what happened. Would you lose? Would you rather become runner up, or you know, just get to the final and go off and carry on your life?
I think that it would have been so much better if I'd come second. I think that people would have, instead of, I got a lot of people saying, oh, Sharon, I mean, the fact that I've got the most votes pretty much every week, it was forgotten. It was pretty obvious I was going, I'm not being, it's not,
me being flash or anything, but the fact was it was very likely that I was going to win. G4 had been in the bottom two. I'd never been in the bottom two. And apart from 1 week, I'd got the most votes. And so it was really a case that if I'd come second, people would have said, oh, look, Sharon ruined it for him. Poor bloke, he would have won it. And I would have probably got the sympathy album buys like G4 did, I guess. So that would have probably helped. But I don't think you can kind of rely on people voting. You've got to make a stand. If I could have done anything again, I probably would have... The moment where Sharon was abusive in the X Factor final, I think I should have just left the stage.
Yeah, that would have been that would have been some YouTube clip. That one.
That would have been pretty good.
Yeah. Moving on to the rest of the book. The rest of the book charts the aftermath of the X Factor and what happened in the 6 to 12 months afterwards, and what happened between you and Simon Cowell and the record company, and then which I think is fairly well documented. But then the most of the book, and it's very I love this subject matter, is about the kind of the press and how it can chew someone up and spit them out and do whatever it wants with them. We've had a decade of press controversy, and you've been in the midst of all this, really, and probably still suffer from it in a way, Steve. What is that like?
There's a point where I didn't like to go out and perform, in certain places, whether it be a birthday party, whether it be, I had a friend of mine who was in a band, and they should come down and sing at a pub, and, every time I was vilified in the press, it affected my work. Gigs would be cancelled, so they make... they make a point for me, they made a point because of the nature of how I fell out with Simon of ruining my career. There was an agenda. It wasn't Steve. No, you can just see why the manner in which they reported on things. They wouldn't report on the good, if I did for example, I went to Monaco and did the Grand Prix, and I was on Kimi Räikkönen's yacht. None of that was reported, but a week later, a friend of my agent says, well, you go and do a pub gig in Cornwall, and it's all over every newspaper. It should be impartial, but it's biased reporting to make me look stupid. And it was difficult, and it still is, because... it's a week before my book comes out and nobody's reporting on it. I've done a new album this year, nobody's reported on it, but if I, it's got to the point now where, Steve, but it's 10 years. Even more so, the fact that it's 10 years since I won X Factor. The show is 10 years old.
Mm. It's strange that as well, because, just a couple of I haven't even got into most of the stories, but a couple of them that we've mentioned would be newsworthy and would be something that, the tabloids would readily pick up. It's a very strange thing. Did you, you write in the book about, obviously the Max Clifford, as you've already mentioned, obviously going to prison and other journalists who you had run-ins with, if you like. Did you feel a certain sense of kind of karma when you saw these things happening, Steve?
I'd be lying, I'd be lying to say that certain people going down didn't make me. It kind of just made me feel vindicated. Mm. You start to believe maybe it is me, maybe I am hard work, but then you see the people that were nasty to you or about you and they are being found out, you suddenly realize I'm not one of these people just to sit and play the game just to get on. I just want, I think you've got to stand by your principles, I guess.
Yeah, and outspoken's never been a bad thing on X Factor, of course, has it, either?
No.
Where are you now then, Steve? In the book you talk about, obviously you're doing what you do, you love best, which you've already mentioned, obviously singing. You seem like you're in a better place. Obviously the book coming out maybe drag some of it back up again, but...
Yeah, I'm getting there. I don't have these hang-ups anymore. Back, I don't go and do a gig, I just go and I don't worry that someone's there to take the mic or take a photograph and say, look, where's that? It's just like, I'm working, I was on I did a cruise the other day, which was fantastic. It was in the Caribbean, and there was a time that I wouldn't want to do it because I thought the press would have a go, but now, because the thing is, the good thing, I'm allowed to do stuff now, because if people, they don't want to give me press, they'd rather not mention I did a cruise, because it brings to light that I've actually got a new album and a new book, so I've got a little bit more freedom to do stuff, because any negativity that's still out there, and there is, without a doubt there is, and people say, and see people still believe the the narrative that was put out there from the beginning. It's gone too long now that you're not going to change everybody's mind, and I don't expect to, but certain people, hopefully the people that had voted and the people that liked my music in the first place, will kind of understand why I've not been around for 10 years, you know.
What's the reaction of people when you see them in face to face?
Well, the thing is, I mean, obviously I've put on a bit of weight now, so I'm a little 10 years on, 10 years past, so it's a bit, vocally, the feedback's been fantastic. So it's kind of nice to get people really appreciating what I do again, and that's all you can do, is you can just do the music. People don't want to go and find it because they've heard so much. It's X Factor, he won it, oh, he's a loser, it flop. So you kind of got to, it's like starting again, you know, and actually it's quite good. You know, and I'm thinking, well, should I play? I've been doing it long enough, you know.
I'm going to ask you one more question on X Factor in a second. Just before that, though, one thing that gets labelled against you, Steve, and it's a fair, I suppose, you know, it would be justified if you were this, is that you're bitter. Now, that doesn't really come across in the book that much, to be honest with you. Because I guess I had that in my mind, you know, because it's difficult not to be, you know, swayed by the constant media, and, you know, you tend to believe a lot of the stuff that you read. Are you bitter?
Not really. I mean, I'm actually more annoyed from the people that still regurgitate the narrative that was false. That bugs me, so I kind of want to correct it. But the thing is, this is the genius of what they did. As soon as I started talking about the past and saying that this is what happened, they labelled me as bitter. That was always going to happen, that, you know, to answer any claims that I had, they were going to dispute. They couldn't argue them. They couldn't dispute them. No one ever discussed these. Oh, everything you read in the book, they would never come out to light. This everything that I've written should have come out years ago. If there was a free press, that all this stuff would have come out, and I wouldn't have had to write the book.
Have you had to kind of swallow some pride and go back and work with the media for this book?
I said that I'm never going to work with The Sun again. And I was talked into it by PR. You should work with The Sun again. I said, I really don't want to. Look, you know, Steve, if you're not bitter, let's prove it. I said, okay, you know what? I'll give these people a chance. Okay? I'll give them a chance. So last week, I agreed to do a story with The Sun about my book. So there's an embargo on the book so that no one could write about it. Mm-hmm. We sit around waiting for The Sun to run the story. This weekend, they were going to run the story. And just before they run the story, we get a phone call saying, you know what? We can't run the story because we've got too many other X Factor things going on. So then I think, I told you this would happen. I said to the PR, I told you this was going to happen. They weren't going to run the story. They were just going to hold us back for a week, waste our time, because ultimately they're going to bury the book. Nobody wants to talk about this book. So this week in the Sun, it was all pro X Factor stuff. It was a propaganda campaign for the X Factor. So they weren't really talking about X Factor. They were promoting X Factor. Mm,
yeah.
The stories that I had were basically stories about X Factor. So it's still out there. There's still this agenda, and it's going to be an exciting time. As I said, I'm not, but they will say, oh, it's another bit of book. But no, to me, it's a case of read it and you decide. I'm not, you know, I can't fight that claim. You can't fight a claim like being bitter, because by fighting it in itself makes you sound bitter.
It's difficult. You're in a no-win situation in a lot of ways. You're fighting.
Exactly.
You're fighting too big a monster, really, aren't you? With too many weapons. And let's just finish off by talking about what X Factor's become, Steve. Because I mean, I've watched it for years now, and been doing a podcast on the betting side of it for what seems like an eternity now. And every year, you know, we all get a bit frustrated with it, and we all kind of, you know, scratch our heads. And you know, there are websites dedicated to the betting on it. So SofaBet.com, you know, a guy who comes on our podcast. There's a lot of conspiracy theories surrounding X Factor, which, you know, you allude to even in the very first series. I mean, things like the running order, obviously, the VTs, the judges' comments, which are probably more manipulated now. At least maybe Sharon was being honest at the time. Deadlock is obviously used to a massive extent. Things like red and black backgrounds are supposed to be a psychological turn off to viewers, and the lyrics in song and everything else. Do you think it is that manipulated, or are we reading so much into it now that are the producers that clever?
No, it was. I mean, the biggest thing is you got to look at The Sun, the newspaper. If you see who they're promoting in The Sun, that's who you're going to bet on. You see who they're putting you off. I mean, Simon doesn't want Andrea to win it. They dressed him in gold, for goodness sake.
Yes.
You know, and then Simon's making laughing at him. And it's like, you should not be laughing at this guy. This guy is vocally the best guy in the show. So you should be, but you're mocking him because you don't want to work with him. They don't want him to win. He might win it because he's the best, and the public generally go for the best. I mean, Matt Cardle, there was a big push for One Direction to win it, but Matt Cardle was obviously the better singer. This year, there's a big push for Fleur and Ben, but it should be Andrea or, you know, Lauren. They're photographing her outside Greg's, you know, stuffing her face with a big pie, and meanwhile, Fleur is in the next photo on the way to the recording studio looking like a star. So you can just look at the way the tabloids are reporting on who they want to win and who they want to work with. Lauren will get mugged off at some point soon. Don't want to vote for her. You know, it's just down to those three, Fleur, Ben and Andrea. Stereo Kicks ain't not going to win it, are they? It is interesting. It's I do find it fascinating. I'm intrigued by the propaganda that they use.
Yeah, that is the fascinating thing. I mean, that's what kind of gets me through in a sense now. It's not the you know. I mean, Andrea is fantastic, but I take more of an interest in the manipulation of an audience. I mean, from the show's point of view and from the media's point of view. And you don't want to tell too many people because people still do enjoy the show, don't they, Steve? You know, I say to people, people don't believe. People think I'm a nutcase when I say this stuff to them.
Do you know what would be a good thing, right? You know when you watch football match and you can have the fans talking, yes, doing the commentary? You should be able to have that, shouldn't you? So we're talking behind the scenes, saying, look how they're manipulating that. Look at the way. And what they're saying to Andre and what they're doing to the...
I suppose Twitter does that to a certain extent, doesn't it? A much better watch, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get that all the time. If I'm not watching X Factor, I get the tweet saying, why aren't you talking about it? I'm not watching it. Sorry, I've got other things.
I've got a life.
I try and watch it purely because I do have the interviews, and you know, otherwise I wouldn't. This year I probably wouldn't have been watching it if it wasn't for the book and the album, you know. But and you know, working with Tony, but it is what it is, and people do enjoy it. The only thing is, as a free society, we should have transparency in a lot of things, and the manipulation of the media is dangerous, you know, because the thing that made me worried, because if they could bury me and I'm so insignificant, if they could manipulate things for someone like me, what is it they manipulate, the things that really matter? That's a bit that scares me, is that I worry about serious subjects that are manipulated in the press.
That's the thing that fascinated the X Factor stuff. Brilliant, it's really enjoyable. That is the stuff that fascinated me, as to, you know, how someone can be boosted to being a hero and then taken straight back down again. And Steve, it's really pleasing that you know, it's a great read, and it's really pleasing that, you know, you're finding some contentment, because it's been a torrid decade for you, to be fair. I wouldn't wish it anyway. I mean, you know, everyone grows up. My 9-year-old daughter, you know, I say, what do you want to do when you're older? I want to be famous. And you're just thinking, oh, goodness me. You know, somehow in the next decade, I need to change her mind quite quickly. That's what we live in, I suppose, isn't it, Steve, at the minute? And you caught the first part of it, didn't you? You caught it when it was just exploding, I think. Maybe people are more canny to it now, I don't know.
Yeah, I think you can use it, but the drive to succeed, you know, they can take so much. I mean, I've heard it, you know, from so many people where they've had some news reports where it's damaged their work. Even the guy that I was working with on the ship, he's a comedian, that he'd done a UKIP gig, you know, and just because he wanted, you know, it was a paid gig, but he just did a regular gig at a UKIP gig. And in the paper, he was branded a, you know, a racist comedian, because for just doing it.
Mm.
And he said his set was not racist at all. And, and obviously from the back of that, he loses work. So it's amazing how you can suddenly stop people from engaging in different aspects of society just by what you write about them in the press, you know. It is interesting, but it's something that I kind of want to pursue. I don't want to kind of just now I've done the book fall back into the, oh yes, I'm really pleased to be here, thank you very much, I don't care about politics, I don't care about life, I just want to be happy, you know. I still want to be part of society and care about what way we're taking.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Kids,
yeah, I think there are quite a few people who will join you in that, despite all the phone hacking and the controversy and the bad press that the press have got. We still buy it and we still read it and we still trust them for some reason.
Yeah, the good thing is there are still people within the press that mean well.
Definitely,
and they might not be at the top of the tree, but they're going to, one day they will be there, and hopefully they're not going to be too jaded to still make a change. So I've always kept the faith. I mean, that's why I've done the book, and I'm still recording because I still believe that good and righteousness will prevail, you know. So, I'm in a lot better place now than I am 8 years ago, you know. Yeah.
Steve, thanks for. I think I've probably kept you longer than I should have, but I could probably talk to you.
Yeah, you can cut out all the nonsense.
Oh, no,
yeah, there's definitely bits in there that I think you should cut out.
we'll discuss that after we've finished chatting. Then the album that you mentioned, Forgotten Man, that's available, of course. Just Google that; you can find all the details for that. The book, Getting Over the X, Steve Brookstein's story of the last decade, basically from the very moment he got the X Factor envelope until the present day, pretty much, is available from the 21st of November. If you enjoy The X Factor and if you've enjoyed Steve Brookstein's music over the years, then you really enjoy the book. Steve, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, buddy.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.